Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 3, Chapter 26, The Fundamental Principles of Material Nature, text number 38. So it's on the board there? Is there a board?
37.
37. Okay. Vayo.
Vayo.
Cha.
Cha.
Sparsha.
Sparsha.
Tanmatrat.
Tanmatrat.
Rupam,
Rupam
Daiva,
Daiva
Iritat,
Iritat
Abhut,
Abhut
Samutitam,
Samutitam
Tata,
Tata
Teja,
Teja
Chakshu, Chakshu,
Chakshu
Rupa,
Rupa
Upalamba,
Upalamba
Upalambanam,
Upalambanam
Vayoshcha sparshatan matrad Rupam daive ritad abhut Samudhitam tatas tejas Chakshu rupo palambanam Vayoscha sparshatan matrad
Vayoscha sparshatan matrad
Rupam daive ritad abhut
Rupam daive ritad abhut
Samuditam tatas tejas
Samuditam tatas tejas
Chakshu rupa palambana
Chakshu rupa palambana
Yo
Vayo.
From air
Cha
and Sparsha
Tanmatrat,
which evolves from the subtle element touch. Rupam form
Daiva
Iritat,
according to destiny.
Abhut evolve. Samuditam arose. Tata from that. Teja
fire.
Chakshu
sense of touch.
Rupam
color and form.
Upalambanam
perceiving.
Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. By interactions of the air and the sensations of touch, one receives different forms according to destiny. By evolution of such forms, there is fire, and the eye sees different forms and color. Purport. Because of destiny, the touch sensation, the interactions of air, and the situation of the mind, which is produced of the ethereal element, one receives a body according to his previous activities. Needless to say, Livianti transmigrates from one form to another. His form changes according to destiny and by the arrangement of a superior authority, which controls the interaction of air and the mental situation. Form is the combination of different types of sense perception, predestined activities of the plans, of the mental situation, and the interaction of air. Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutaya Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasatundeve Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskyatya Devi Sitarama. This is Gaukapila Dev is giving Sankhya philosophy. Generally, these things seem a little confusing to most of us. although it's dealing with specifically the Bhagavatam before the 10th canto especially, deals with philosophy, which is more or less, a lot of it is perceivable by us. But sometimes it's put in such a way as it's difficult for us to relate to. In any case, here it mentions Vayu, air. And Ayurveda, Vayu is the principle by which all activity is done. Without air moving, nothing can move. Therefore, Hanuman and Bhima, being the sons of the Vayu, the wind god, were very powerful. And if we think about it, we can see that things do move due to air. Subtle air. By subtle air, all activities are taking place. There are different types of air within the body, known as prana. And prana is divided up into prana, apana, vyana, samana, and vyana. Those are the five major types of air within the body. Prana goes upward, apana goes downward. Samana works in the stomach and helps us digest food. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that he joins with the air of life to digest the five kinds of foodstuffs. So that air of life is called samana. And vyana works on the mental, on the intellectual platform to help us understand things properly, to retrieve memory, for instance. The fact that we have memory is a movement, a subtle movement. Memory is stored within the consciousness, and in order to retrieve it, it takes some activity, although subtle. Therefore, we may think it's coming spontaneously, but it actually requires some subtle movement. Just like, for instance, if you have a library and you want to get a book, you have to go to the library shelf, take the book out, open it up, and look up what you're looking for. Similarly, the consciousness works like that. That memory is stored within our consciousness, and therefore it takes some energy to retrieve it and look it up. The more organized one is, for instance, the more rapidly one can retrieve that particular part of the memory that one is looking for. If one is a little disorganized, instead of retrieving what we're looking for, we may retrieve something else, and therefore we have to go back and look in another shelf to see if maybe it's there, maybe it's there. Spend the whole hours looking through our memory, trying to figure out where is it, because we've never really tried to organize our memories very well. So that's the job of jhana. And so that's the five, prana, apana, vyana, samana, and udana. Actually, udana, I guess, udana circulates throughout the whole body. More or less to connect everything together. So Krishna has very nicely arranged everything, but here it mentions the mind. The mind is actually the cause of our taking different bodies. Of course, we can't blame it on the mind. It's my mind. No, it's us. But due to our attachment to the subtle mind, therefore we're creating a certain type of mental situation. That we become attached or detached or unattached or something because of our knowledge or lack of knowledge, because of our perception. Intelligence. So the soul sitting there in the body, he's trying to enjoy this particular field of activity. Idam shariram kondiya kshetram itupidiyate etad yavetitam prahur kshetra gyam ititadvida. There's a knower in the body called the soul, the atma, and he's situated in the body, and the body is considered a field. So according to the seeds that the soul is sowing, then he was going to get a certain type of fruit. So those seeds may be attachment to mental conceptions, just like all of us have experience. certain things appear within our minds. And then we have to search with our intelligence to figure out what just appeared in our mind. We have to identify it. Similarly, we look outside through these eyes. We also have to search within our memories to figure out what's going on. Generally, we see the same thing going on all the time. We think we see what's going on, and therefore it's not a big search. We just conclude, you know, what's going on. There's a man, there's a female, there's a dog, there's a cat, there's a street, there's a car going by, there's a newspaper. So we think, oh, I thought that was reality, and it's confirmed every time I look around. Of course, if one takes some drug, which slows up the whole process, then sometimes one can't figure out, what is that? Oh, that's right, it's a newspaper. And what are those letters? Can't figure it out. Have to wait till I get off the drug. But actually, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam in the second canto, Pashana Pina Pashuti, we think we're seeing, but actually we're not seeing. We think we understand what's going on, but actually we don't understand because we're covered by the modes of material nature, and therefore we see through those coverings. But if one can actually see, then one can see what the Srimad Bhagavatam is saying, is explaining. Or in the Bhagavad Gita, it's actually, I think it's a little bit more clear in the Bhagavad Gita. Sharira yadavapnoti yatschap yukramati shraha vihi vaitani samyati vayor ganda ivashaya. The living entity carries his different conceptions of life, just like air carries aroma. So we're carrying around our different conceptions of life. The soul, although by nature the soul is unattached to any of these things because we have nothing to do with the material world. We're all transcendental. It is not that we think, oh, you're a very elevated devotee, therefore you're transcendental. Actually, all of us are transcendental. We have nothing to do with the material world, but we're all prisoners of the material consciousness that we ourselves have created. Just like a moth or a worm builds a cocoon around itself and therefore becomes entrapped by the cocoon. But who created the cocoon? It's the moth who created it. So in the material world, all of us created this cocoon called a material body around ourselves. And it's composed of a gross body and a subtle body. And some of us are manifesting qualities or activities which are desirable and others which are undesirable. But in any case, the person who is manifesting the activities is not changing because desirable or undesirable, anisham, nisham, mishrim cha, trividam, anishtam, ishtam, mishrim cha, trividam, desirable, undesirable, mixed, kura, death. For those who are in the renounced order of life have no such results to suffer or enjoy. Sorry for this, but anisham. Anisham isham misrim cha trividam karmanapalam bhavat yat yaginam pretya netu sanyasinam kvachit. For one who is not renounced, the threefold fruits of action occur: desirable, undesirable, and mixed. For those who are in the renounced order of life have no such results to suffer or to enjoy. In other words, those who want to keep the cocoon around them, and enjoy this warm cocoon that we're situated in. Snuggle up and be comfortable. Then there are three types of activities we get. Desirable, undesirable, and mixed. But sannyasinam kvachit, natu sannyasinam kvachit, those who are in the renounced order of life have no such results to suffer or to enjoy. In other words, there is a process called renunciation. Renounced order of life doesn't mean simply those who have a danda and put on a certain dress and they have a certain name at the end of their title, a certain title at the end of their name. They're in the renounced order of life. Now, anyone, even the ladies, can be in the renounced order of life. Although officially we don't do sannyas to anyone, to ladies. But they can, they're also supposed to be in the renounced order of life. In the sense that we have to renounce our attachment to this material identification and the things in relationship to this material body. That we have to renounce, and the renunciation takes place principally on the mental platform. Our feeling towards these things. Of course, above the mental platform is the intellectual platform, so we have to become intellectually convinced that things as they actually are, and then when we actually feel like that, when we accept it, not that, oh, what a dry philosophy, I can't accept that. In other words, the intelligence can tell us exactly what's going on, but we may not like it. We may say, wow, that's too dull. I don't want to become a servant. I want to be God. So the mind says, forget it. It may be true, but just forget it. So it is not enough to have an intellectual conception of life. We also have to have a feeling for it. We have to accept it. We have to like it. We have to become enthusiastic about it. Just like, for instance, we follow the Purayula principles and we can recite them. No meat eating. No fish eating. No illicit sex. No gambling. What a drag. But we follow them anyhow because we don't mind following this torturous process so we can be happy. So we think, oh yeah, it's right. We'll preach to someone really strong. It's right. You got to follow it. Bang, bang over their head. Oh, I guess I got to follow it too. It's so blissful to follow. Well, we actually have to become enthusiastic. Enthusiastic, but it's not possible to be enthusiastic simply by an intellectual understanding. Therefore, we actually have to live according to it, purify the mind, purify the consciousness of our attachments, because the intelligence can tell us it's not good to have attachments, material attachments. What is the material attachment? Material attachment is principally, this is mine and I'm going to enjoy it. Whatever it is. As long as we have that conception, then whatever our intelligence may tell us, still we're going to, you know, we'll be on the mental platform. In other words, the intelligence can say, this is bad, this is not good. And we say, yeah, it's not bad and that's good. And we preach, it's not bad, it's not good. And within ourselves, we're just dwelling on the mental platform. It may not be bad, it may not be good, but at least it's mine. It's something to hang on to. So, intelligence can only bring us so far. We also have to get off the... We have to purify the mind to get a different type of experience. Just by an intellectual, theoretical understanding, it won't be sufficient. Therefore, devotional service is meant so we can also get a different conception, a different experience. Or actually experience what we're talking about on the mental platform, on the platform of thinking and feeling and willing. Understanding things theoretically, then we have to do something. So here it mentions the air. Everyone is doing something. It's not that only the devotees have intelligence and they have certain feelings towards things, and they do things on that basis. The whole world is doing it. And we ourselves, according to our conception, that we're also going to do something. Now, our conviction as devotees is that we have to do something for Krishna. Something for Krishna,
It is not a question that I have to do something great for Krishna or else I'm not going to do anything. What can we do that's great for Krishna? Build him a universe? Anyone here can build a universe for Krishna? Even you can build a universe. Krishna has billions of universes. He wouldn't even notice your universe. Hey Krishna, it's my universe. So what? That's the worst universe I've seen so far. I'm not impressed. What are we going to do that's going to impress Krishna? Not much. Because even we try to do something to impress Krishna, still we have to rely upon him and his energies to do anything. We're not independent. And anyway, we can desire to do something great, and we can give up all the things that impede our desires. In other words, desire, if we had no impediments towards our desires, whatever we desired would manifest itself immediately by the mercy of Krishna and through his energies. That's the way the material world works. In other words, if I desired to create a planet, but I had no disqualifications for doing so, then Krishna would arrange it through his energies that a planet would be created. And if I had knowledge, I'd realize that I desired it, and Krishna, through his energies, created it. Because somehow or another I was qualified. I had the adhikar to create a planet, better known as mystic power. But there is a adhikar. It is not that anyone who desires it will immediately create a planet, because there are disqualifications too. There are demerits. The principal demerits are that we don't have the proper mental and physical situation to do so, or intellectual situation to do so. But one can develop that intellectual, mental, and physical situation to do so, and that is the process of yoga, which is basically a process by which one gives up or performs tapasya and gives up the process of sense gratification, which acts as impediments between what we're desiring and Krishna fulfilling those desires. In other words, very practically, if one is engaged in sense gratification, then one's physical, mental, intellectual capacity goes down. And therefore, one won't even have the faith that it could be done. One will, what to speak of understanding how to do it on the gross and subtle platform, especially on the subtle platform. If we're talking about mystic power. Therefore, the more people engage in sense gratification, then the less capability they have to do anything, physically, mentally, or intellectually. And the more one engages in tapasya, then the more one's capacity increases. Of course, the problem in the material world is that as soon as one gets some capacity, some results from one's activities, then generally one wants to utilize those results for sense gratification, which brings one down again to a lower level. Not only on the gross level, just like we can see when people get rich, they have so much money, then immediately, as Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, they want to utilize it for sense gratification, especially meat-eating, illicit sex, gambling, and intoxication. Therefore, the people who have the most money, most material facilities, generally the most sinful. So their wealth doesn't actually do them very much good. John Lennon and Yoko, is that her name? Yoko? Loco. Yoko. So Prabhupada was staying at their house in England, and he was observing how actually degraded they were. And one day Trivikram Maharaj mentioned to Srila Prabhupada that how rich they were. That they had hundreds of millions of dollars. So Prabhupada said, what is the good of their money? They have no idea how to use it. We may have a lot of money, but if it buys us a ticket to hell, then what is the good of it? You get on the express train going to hell, first class, a jet going to hell. You're flying first class into hell. So what? What is the value of such a ticket? On the other hand, even subtly, also, when we claim the results of our work or the credit for our work, subtly also, is a type of sense gratification. And as a result of that, we also become mentally bewildered or degraded or confused or the pure intelligence that we need to actually bring us back to the spiritual world gets covered over by this false sense of being the doer. Therefore, Krishna consciousness is based primarily on hearing, so we can understand things properly, get the right intellectual understanding at least, get everything clear, and at the same time be willing to act according to what's clear by performing devotional service, by becoming Tesham Sadatam Yuktanam Vajantam Priti Purvakam. So the two things, we have to do what Krishna wants us to do, according to the intelligence that Krishna is giving us, and we have to do it enthusiastically. Not that now I realize the truth and it wasn't the truth that I wanted to realize. So now I'm all depressed that this is the truth. And I gotta follow it or else I'm gonna get in trouble. But it's not out of love, it's simply out of fear of the reaction I'm going to get. So that's not bhakti, that's gyan. So gyan can only bring us so far. Only by bhakti, Krishna says, can one actually understand him. We may understand Krishna, oh, he's the big one. If I don't follow him, then something bad will happen to me. So, alright, I'll follow him. I mean, I wish within my heart things were different. We could turn the tables on Krishna, but it appears so far we can't do it. So that's gyan. That, by that method, one can realize Paramatma. But the loving nature of Krishna, to realize the loving nature of his eternal servants, to realize our loving nature, which is a pleasure potency. Pleasure doesn't mean sense gratification. Actual pleasure means to experience the love that Krishna has for his devotees and the love that his devotees have for him. That is pleasure. Nothing else is actually pleasurable, either for the soul or for the soul. And the ultimate culmination of that pleasure is to awaken our own pleasure potency so that we can participate in the pastimes of Krishna. Our own pleasure potency means our own ability to love others in relation to Krishna, to love Krishna and everyone else in relationship to him. When that love is awakened, then our love for the external world and our material misconceptions are automatically finished. Just like when one wakes up from a dream, then automatically the dream is forgotten. One no longer takes it seriously. So when we awaken to our real activities, that is the activities of pure unalloyed devotional service, then these activities all centered around, you know, what's going to happen to my body, you know, will it be happy and comfortable, will it be distressed and uncomfortable. All our concerns over these things are forgotten. It's our concern and our focus on this body and the mind, rather than on devotional service, is the reason why we have this body, we're experiencing this body now, and the reason why we get our next body. Therefore, here it mentions the touch sensation, the interactions of air and the situation of the mind. So touch is being given some importance here, because consciousness, anaditvam nirgunatvat paramatmayam avyayam shariras dopikantayana karoti nanulipite. Those who have the eyes of the vision of eternity can see that the soul is transcendental, eternal, and beyond the modes of material nature. Despite the contact with the material body, Arjuna, the soul is neither doing anything nor is the soul entangled. Yata sarvagatam sokshma akashanam pulipite sarvata vastito dehe tatmano pulipite. So this is translated a little differently from the actual Sanskrit by Prabhupada. I guess they didn't really change it. That the soul, sarvagatam sokshma, because he's very subtle within the body, tatasarvagatam sokshma akashanam no pulipite, he's compared to the air. So that although the air is circulating somewhere, the sky doesn't really touch anything. So although the sky is there and the air is there, although the air circulates everything, everywhere within the sky, the air actually doesn't touch the sky. So similarly, the soul, because we're very subtle, although our consciousness pervades the whole body, that actually we're not really touching the body. We have actually nothing to do with the body. We're not getting infected by it. We're experiencing it, happiness and distress, or a combination of both, but we're actually not getting affected by it. We've just chosen to stay in hell for eternity, that's all, to enjoy this hellish world, or universe, or different heavenly hell, and lower, this middle planetary hell, and the lower planetary hell. Sometimes up, sometimes less problems, less anxiety, and sometimes more. And when we have less anxiety, we call that heaven. And we have more anxiety, we call it earth. And when we have a great deal, the most anxiety, we call it hell. But it's just the lack of our real activities, the real experience, which is unalloyed pleasure and bliss and love. So we're mixed up with this body, but due to our subtle nature, we actually don't mix up with the body. Just like the air doesn't mix with the sky, although it may pervade it, maybe everywhere within it. Up with the air. Hita prakashiyat yekam kritsnam lokim amravi kshetri kshetram kshetri tita kritsnam prakashiyati parada. Just like the sun is in one place and illuminates the whole universe with sunlight, so the soul, situated in one part of the body, is illuminating the whole body with consciousness. So we have consciousness. Therefore, because we have consciousness, therefore we're aware of the body. So people ask, what is Krishna consciousness? Well, we already know what consciousness is, just like we're conscious of this body. Now, for us, this body is our worshipable deity. Just like for the deity worship, we offer things to the deities, and we bathe the deities, and we feed the deities. So this body has become our worshipable deity. Our most worshipable deity. And therefore we're engaged in feeding it and clothing it and putting it to rest, chanting prayers to it, whatever else. Praying for it, its well-being and its safety. But actually we're not the body. It's simply become a worshipful object in our existence, temporarily, until we get our next Ishtadeva, our next body. And of course we hope that this body will become the worshipful object for others. We take birth and not only people love their body, but they love our little baby body. How cute it is. It looks just like me. Reminds me of me, therefore it becomes worshipable. Or it'll help me, therefore it's worshipable. It's respectable at least. But actually we have nothing to do with the body. Just like the sun, although it illuminates the whole universe with sunlight, it always is in one place. Similarly, the soul, having nothing to do with the body, has become entrapped in the drama of material existence, especially one's own personal existence. And that has become the whole center focus of our awareness. So Krishna consciousness means simply to transfer our attachment to this material drama that we've created due to our past activities, and somehow or another, by utilizing our activities, dovetailing them in Krishna's service, as well as trying to hear about Krishna so we can think about his pastimes, both in this world, as explained in the Bhagavad Gita, and in the transcendental world, as explained in such books as the Krishna book, the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So we have a worshipful object to focus on, and we have activities here to serve, so we can serve that worshipful object, Krishna. And the more one serves in this world with one's body, mind, and words, that worshipable object, then Krishna, being pleased, reveals himself, and then we're able to realize Krishna both in this world and on this subtle transcendental platform of the soul. Or as Bhagavan, the soul, the super soul, and as Brahman. Then if we realize Krishna, Krishna reveals himself to us as we experience the transcendental ecstasy of associating with Krishna, as we experience our own loving feelings awakened, then the mental situation changes. That is, it becomes purified from the mode of ignorance to the mode of passion to the mode of goodness. And in the mode of goodness, we can understand that the soul, ourselves, we have no other business than to think about Krishna and to try and love Krishna and serve him. then what was understood theoretically by utilizing our intelligence to engage the mind and the senses in Krishna's service becomes realized practically as loving transcendental love, service to Krishna. So, stop there. Any questions? Yes.
Can you explain the difference between prana or the different kinds of prana and mahaprana, and what are the similarities or what is the connection between?
Between what?
Between mahaprana and
mahaprana. You heard of mahaprana. What is mahaprana?
I don't know. Therefore, I ask you. I heard it in a lecture in Vrindavan, how Krishna is sometimes called, or how Krishna is worshipped as mahaprana or something like that, the possessor of the. Of the life energy of the universe.
Yeah. Well, because Krishna possesses everything. So, all the airs that are floating, that are going in the universe, are all controlled by Krishna through his agency called Maya. So, everything is working uniformly under the laws of nature. So, our proportion of prana and the other elements are given to us according to what we deserve. And in the course of time, under the laws of time, or time is changing the modes of nature according to our past activities, what we're supposed to receive. So more than that, I mean, to move the planets requires air. The planets move to, and Krishna controls, use the air. Vayorya Magnira Varuna Shishankas Pratapidish Twam Patitamahascha Namonamaste Susahasrakritva Punakchapuyopi Namonamaste. You are air, you are fire, you are water, you are ether, you're the grandfather. So Krishna is all these things. They're all his energies coming from him, and he's controlling them directly or indirectly. Yeah.
Krishna appears, he first comes into the mind of Vasudeva, and through the heart he goes to Devaki, and from Devaki he enters into the womb. Can you describe maybe in the verse of prana how it works? Or
it's not prana.
This is very abstract.
It's not abstract, it's transcendental. It's abstract to us because we're in the material platform. But Krishna, he's everywhere, so he can appear anywhere. Not that Krishna was only in the mind of Vasudeva, and therefore he shot him into the mind of Devaki. No, Krishna was ready. He appeared in the mind of Vasudeva by his desire, by Vasudeva desiring it, and Krishna appeared in the mind of Devaki. And he was never actually in the womb of Devaki. He may have appeared in that particular area, so it appeared that he was in the womb, but Krishna is always beyond anything material. And he didn't have to go anywhere because he's transcendental. He's everywhere. Just like the example that we can probably best understand it is that the sun is in one place, but it appears beyond our head. But wherever we go, it appears to be on our head. So it's not that the sun is moving, but because of the situation of the sun, it appears to be our head in many different places and many different people's heads. But the sun is always in the same place. So Krishna, he can be in one place and at the same time appear everywhere. So he doesn't have to go anywhere. But by a certain, according to one's capacity, then Krishna is appearing to everyone in different ways. So he appeared in the mind of Vasudeva, because Vasudeva was on the transcendental platform himself, so therefore there was no problem. And so was Devaki. But for our benefit, there is a sequence that's given, so we can get some indication that this is kind of like a birth or something, appearance. But it's actually not an ordinary birth; it's divya, it's divine.
This analogy you mentioned about sun and the rays is used for the Paramatma. The Paramatma is one, but he manifests in every atom. Does it mean that Krishna or the Paramatma take up the shape of Krishna?
Krishna is Paramatma. Paramatma is Krishna. There's no difference between them. Paramatma is simply Krishna acting as Paramatma.
He doesn't come from Goloka.
He comes from Goloka. He's already in Goloka. He's transcendental Paramatma. Where do you think he comes from?
If he was already there as Paramatma, then there's no need to descend. But if he descends, he
doesn't descend. Paramatma doesn't descend.
No, Krishna descends.
Krishna doesn't descend either. It appears that he does.
The demigods went to get him.
What's that?
The demigods went to get him.
Well, the example is used to our sight, he appears to descend. Just like the sun appears to descend from our point of view. The sun's not descending. That's just our vision. Krishna is already there. He disappears at a certain time. Or even if we can say that sometimes he appears and disappears. Because, you know, Krishna likes to travel in planes and things like that. He likes to travel on at least, you know, Daruka comes and brings him here and there. But he's already there. It's just for his pastimes he does these things. Because just like we like to travel, so he also likes to travel. Although actually he doesn't, for him there's no problem. We get on a plane or something and, you know, there's so many bumps, so many rides, you get hit by the radiation in the sky, you can't breathe the air. But for Krishna it's all pleasure. His journey is just part of his transcendental pleasure. But if he wanted to, he'd disappear because he's already there. Just like he appeared from the nostril as Varaha of Brahma. He didn't have to go through a whole thing, you know, get into his, you know, Varaha vehicle and journey down to Brahma's abode and then, you know, jump into his nostril and then pop out from it. No, Krishna doesn't have to go through this. Parasya Shakti Avividaiva Shuditam Sabhavaki Gyanabala Kriyasha. When we see Krishna coming, for instance, sometime, or going back, it says Balaram manifested from his mouth a snake and then rode an Atashesha back to the spiritual world. That's just for his pleasure pastime. But in this case, suddenly he appeared in the mind of Vasudeva. But that means he was already there. And then in the mind of Devaki, but he was already there. They were, had performed penances for thousands of years, so they're meditating on Krishna. So they're always thinking about Krishna. It wasn't that he suddenly appeared. Suddenly they became Krishna conscious. But for the purpose of this pastime, therefore it's explained like that. So from the mundane point of view, we can think that Krishna is now appearing, that they were his father and mother. Actually, they're eternally his father and mother. But for the purpose of this pastime, it appears like that. So it gets a little, because they're not exactly Vasudeva and Devaki. They're demigods, infused with the potency of Devaki and Vasudeva, infused with that paternal mood, the demigod portion. So the Vasudeva and Devaki, who are in the spiritual world as Krishna's eternal parents. Yes. Well, we can't disagree with it. That's what it says in the Krishna book. And then they have the son, Krishnigarbha.
Krishnigarbha, Bali, and the Krishna world. They have been three.
Yeah, three times.
Before they were Kashyap and Diti, and afterwards they were also Taimadu, Kasa. These are the same portions, infected in different portions.
I don't know if they were in, I don't remember them being in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Who did they come back in then? That wasn't, that was Mother Sachi, was Yashoda. Oh, Mother Sachi was Yashoda and Jagannath Misra, he was Nanda Maharaj. They were incarnations. Anyhow, it's whatever. Pretty inconceivable, and to me at least. Whoever they were quite transcendental. Yes?
It's Vayu, that is the same as Prabhu?
Vayu is more or less the original. Prana is the energetic source. Just like you may have fire. But within fire there's heat and light. So the energetic principle of air is prana. and which has its own subdivisions. But vayu or air is the case, like the covering, the container.
And then pran comes from, evolves from kam, from ether?
I mean, there's a process. Ether is said to be one of the steps in the evolution, or devolution, I guess, coming from from pradhan. Krishna creates the pradhan, and then from pradhan comes, you know, so many different stages of vyakta, the three modes, and finally ether. Krishna is manifested as ether, and from ether comes sound, and from sound everything else is manifested. Yeah, part of it, of course, is air. But when we say air, I guess they're referring to both the container as well as its contents. Because generally in Sankhya Yoga, they don't list prana separately. The 26 elements, they don't mention prana, or tejas, or ojas. But we assume that these are the energetic principles of air. So it's included within the category of air. Yes.
I don't know if you understand properly. You said that in spiritual world there are Rudra and Devaki, and those here they are like this is a position of Rudra and Devaki.
Well, it's a little bit. I don't fully understand it, but if you read the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you find out that there are demigod portions of these devotees in the spiritual world. So there are demigod portions means that they're jiva souls who are demigods, but they become infused with a certain desire of devotion towards Krishna. And that desire of devotion is more or less coming from those original personalities in the spiritual world. So then they desire to act as Krishna's parents, and following the same mood as the original personalities in the spiritual world. So it says that they're... What's that?
But they are not.
No, they're not. They're demigods. But, you know, there's a portion of them which are actually, because they're infused with that consciousness, that means that those original personalities are also present. Therefore, they're considered to be partial incarnations of those original personalities. In other words, without those personalities being present, you can't be infused with that particular spirit. It's by association. So they're there, and also the demigod portion is there also, but they act non-differently because it's just like by association. The demigod portion takes on the same mood of service, and they become practically one. They act as Devaki or Vasudeva, or the other associates of Krishna, who were demigods who came down. Is that clear?
This is something some subtle manifestation of...
Subtle? You can't get more subtle than that. Of course, it's very subtle. It's spiritual. In other words, just like if I'm thinking of Nanda Maharaj and Vasudeva, or the residents of Vrindavan, then I become by association infused with the same feelings that they have. Matter of fact, just like when the yogis see Paramatma, they're so much identified with Paramatma, they actually think that they are Paramatma. So certainly by meditation on the transcendental pastimes of the residents of Vrindavan, one becomes completely overwhelmed with their feelings, their activities, their feelings, everything. And one actually practically becomes just like they are. No, it's called, yeah. That's the process by which one can come to that platform. But the residents of Vrindavan are called Radhatmika devotees. They're fully transcendental. But by associating with them through devotional service, one comes to develop the same mood that they have by association. And therefore, one practically is just like they are. One acts like they are, one can talk like they are. It's not that one becomes them. But by association, one becomes just like them.
And what is happening then? If they go back to original position, which is another one?
Well, you have to ask Krishna. When Krishna removed the Aru dynasty, he said some of them were actually demigods. They went back to their demigod position. Just like Vidura went back to his position as Yamaraj.
But after creation, material creation is finished, then...
Depends how devotional they are. If they're very advanced devotionally, then they can go back to the spiritual world. But it appears that part of the position of a demigod is you get to sometimes participate in Krishna's pastimes like that. Whether all the demigods do it or not, that I can't say. But some of them do. And apparently, it's not just by even experiencing that great transcendental happiness of participating in Krishna's pastimes, and even associating with the residents of Vrindavan, that one necessarily automatically goes back to the spiritual world, at least not immediately. Because still one has to resume one's position as a demigod for some time. That may mean that these demigods become fully transcendental, and although they perform the functions of demigods, they're pure devotees. They're unalloyed devotees. Just like Nala Kuvera and Manigriva, after they've been cursed, when Krishna overthrew the trees, the Arjuna trees that they were living in, then their demigod bodies, they came out as demigods. But they became fully purified by associating with Krishna. But that didn't mean that they went back to the spiritual world immediately. They went back to the heavenly planet that they were coming from. But they went back as pure devotees. Yeah.
Now, a nice question is this. Demigod worshippers, they worship demigods, but actually say now, actually some of them is the devotees.
No, it doesn't make any difference. If you worship a pure devotee as something other than a pure devotee, then you don't get the effect. That's like my... When's
I worship Prabhupada and I'm looking for money, how are you to, what kind of devotion is this?
Not very good. You probably won't, neither of you get devotion, you probably won't get very much money either. Yeah.
When the condition soul of that liberation, then he was in the spiritual world, and Paramatma resides in the heart, he merges into Kshira Sai Vishnu.
What do you ask these questions for? Even if we gave an understanding, you may not understand it. They don't merge into any. I mean, we can use, sometimes it's used merge, but they're already, it's not like there's a difference between them.
But in explanation, sometimes say that Paramatma is Krishna, and sometimes talk about Paramatma is the four-armed Narayan form.
It's not, Krishna's not going anywhere as Paramatma. It's not that if you go back to the spiritual world, then Paramatma has to go with you or find a different job to do. He has to get another occupation. You know, I've been traveling around with this guy since time immemorial. Suddenly he left, and he left me all by myself. What should I do? No, he's everywhere in the creation. And because we're in the creation, therefore we get his assistance. And if we leave, he's still going to be there anyhow. If you reciprocate with him, if you act like a devotee, then he'll reciprocate with you as Krishna. He is Krishna, but he's just acting in a certain way because that's how we, that's our position, that's how we're relating to him, therefore he relates to us in that way. Yeah. Well, it's suggested that the only thing we can do to impress Krishna is to surrender to his, become a servant of his servants. That's the only thing that really impresses him. Mystic power. Just mystic. Everyone has mystic power. They're not doing anything. They're just desiring in a certain way. And Krishna, under the laws of nature, if they're qualified, he does it for them through his material energy. They're not doing anything. Yeah. Special mercy? No, not from Krishna. There's no nothing special about being a Reiki master.
Yeah,
just How are you connected? Everyone's connected. How are you breathing air? Hasn't done the earth very much good lately. No, these things, we don't know how the laws of material nature work. Just like if you cut your finger, do you know how it's healing? By Reiki. And about what about the people who don't have Reiki, who don't do Reiki? How does their finger heal? Mystic power. Mystic power means we don't know how it works, that's all. So we don't know how anything works in the material world because we're in ignorance. And sometimes we get some ability to do something, still we don't know how it works because we're not the doer. It's just that somehow or another, by some association, we've acquired some ability. When we desire something, it works in a certain way. But that doesn't mean that we're doing it. It just means that by some association, we acquire a certain ability, that's all. We already have so many abilities. Not we have the abilities, but we have the ability to, as souls, to desire in a certain way, and Krishna has the ability to manifest it in many different ways through his energies. Are you a devotee of Reiki? I'm a Reiki servant. No, these things. There's so many. Actually, there are so many mystic powers we acquire as we become. Actually, as more we become purified. Because the more we identify with Krishna, who's the source of all mystic powers, and the more everyone gets some kind of mystic power, the more we become conscious of Krishna. The more the spark approaches the fire, then the more the spark gets brighter, one gets the same potency as the fire does. But we're not worried about those things, it's just a botheration for the devotees. Because even if you got all kinds of mystic power, we'd probably just misuse it and go to hell. So what good would it do? Better keep life simple. We can hardly utilize whatever Krishna has already given us in service. So just try and concentrate whatever little we have now in Krishna's service. That's hard enough. What to speak of trying to get more and more things and then get completely confused. I mean, what good is Reiki? Can Reiki save you from dying? Can Reiki make you conscious of Krishna? Yeah, sometimes. So that much we can accept it, but we're not, we don't chant 16 rounds of Reiki every day. We're trying to perform devotional service, and if something is acceptable or helpful, then we accept it. If it's not distracting. But to glorify Krishna's subtle energies and subtle abilities and forget about Krishna, that's not very good. And we'll forget about the whole purpose of these things.
Yeah. The previous book also said that the air circulation in body will be through certain channels.
Yeah, sure. It's called nadis. Or they call them strotras. There's all kinds of channels, gross and subtle in the body.
And then how do they move the body? Use the understanding as opposed to the muscle.
The nerves, the muscles, the air, so many things. The whole. They may one connect me to the others, and ultimately, because how do the muscles move? Say you say the muscles move the body, but how are the muscles moving?
By the nerve system.
Yeah, and how the nerves move it.
Is this electrical?
And what generates the electricity? Well, that people don't know. Therefore, that's why this, the science is there. prana is, electricity is another form of prana. We say, or when we say nervous impulses, that's where prana is. It's how it's moving through the gross body. But the active principle is prana.
Before the nerve, they activate the nerves.
Yeah. Sure. They move along, generally they move along the nervous system, prana.
And what moves the prana, the mind?
Yeah, of course, the mind is moving the prana. And above the mind is the intelligence, above the intelligence is the soul, and above the soul is the super soul. So the soul, the super soul gives the intelligence how to do it. The soul gives, you know, desires to do it. And then it works through the, goes down through the, you know, the, from the subtle to the gross plasma. Yeah.
Is there any Gita that supports that the soul is floating in the five products? What does it mean? Floats in the five products?
It's in the heart. And it's a connection with those five pranic eras.
They can move the soul by regulating
from it? Yeah, sure. That's the Ashtanga Yoga system.
You see, that by metric, then you can move the soul?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
So the same soul can be present in aura?
What's that?
The same soul can be present and find in aura, in our aura.
Oh, I wouldn't get into that. No. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that at the time of death, the soul is carried. He carries. I mean, it's not the air that carries. Krishna carries, but he carries him with the air. So Krishna makes the arrangement for the soul to move. But it says it's floating. So the soul is subtle, it's transcendental. But Krishna can arrange it. When the soul is in ignorance, he voluntarily goes along with the life air to different places. He follows it. But it's all arranged by Krishna. Krishna makes all the arrangements. So it's not like Krishna is out of the picture at any moment. Krishna is always in the picture. And everything happens under his arrangement.